This episode of Access Utah was first broadcast in December of last year.
Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. A recent article in the Deseret News is headlined, "Out of Print, Can Libraries Survive the Digital Age?" In a time when people are reading fewer books and spending more time online, we thought we'd turn to one of our favorite librarians to examine the future of these beloved institutions. Sam Passy is director of the Uintah County Library in Vernal. He'll join us for the hour to review current challenges and opportunities and look to the future. And we'll ask you about your experiences of the library and how that might be changing. Love to get your input, especially in a public radio community. A lot of love for the libraries, but maybe worry about the future. You can email us to upraccess@gmail.com. upraccess@gmail.com. So we bring on Sam Passy. Thanks for joining us again.
Hey, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. We talked out a while back about the digital books, right? E-books. So maybe review that again as we go along. But this article in the Deseret News, Mark Nielsen's the author, really caught my eye. I love libraries. You do, and our listeners do. So what's the future? But first of all, let's review your background. How did you get into libraries?
Sure. Well, I'm kind of an accidental librarian. I was always interested in history, and I thought I was going to be an archivist, kind of like Indiana Jones, but you get to touch the objects and things, and no one shoots at you. And worked at a couple of university archives, and then went to grad school for library science, and came to Uintah County, and a few weeks onto the job as their archivist, their historian, my boss took a job in Saudi Arabia, and they asked me to fill in, and I said, I'm happy to do that under the condition that once you find a library director that I can go back to being the archivist. And that was 17 years ago. And it's been a fun and exciting journey, and I've learned to love public libraries and all things library and the community, and this is such an exciting time to be a librarian.
Exciting time, you say. I guess they're, along with threats, there are opportunities.
Certainly. And I think that one of the most wonderful things and most challenging things for libraries right now is the sense of nostalgia that surrounds them. I think many of us have memories of little ladies whispering hush to us, attending story times as children, which are fantastic programs, and the people that work in libraries are amazing. There isn't quite so much shushing these days, and most modern public libraries are thriving community centers as well as libraries. But it requires a change in skill set and a change in programming and the way we think about what libraries are and how we measure for success. If the only metrics you're looking at for measuring success are numbers of checkouts, those have been in decline for a few years across the board in libraries as people turn more and more to streaming, to downloading, to the internet at large. But people come into the library every single day, and we're averaging just above 300 visits to the library a day by individuals here in Vernal, Utah, and it's been exciting to see the myriad of things that brings them to the library. And I'm looking forward to talking with you about what some of those things are.
Certainly. I want to quote from this article, Deseret News article. 17 minutes of shame is the little subheadline. That's how long the average American spends reading books each day. And on the other hand, we now spend 7 hours of a typical day looking at screens. Of course, that could include reading, but in this statistic, they're not. The screens would include TV, playing video games, working on computers, etc. It used to be you'd go in and you'd check out a physical book. Nowadays, a lot of people, if they do read, they're reading online. And overall, at least collectively, we're reading less. How does that impact the library?
Yeah, it's a challenge. We have so much of our floor space that's dedicated to print, physical materials. I have a collection, a large collection of audiobooks on CD that basically sit now that people want download and streaming audio, which I can't keep up on. But what it leads to, at least in our community, is we have a lot of people that come in for early childhood literacy needs, story time. My kid has a voracious appetite. And here's the amazing thing is kids are reading. As we've watched the statistics change at our library, we've seen a decrease in things that adults are checking out, but the teenagers, the children, those checkouts are still very, very strong. And the activities that we have surrounding those, the reading programs, are well attended. And in fact, right now, the children have been helping two staff members from the Central Utah Water Project are on a trip to Antarctica right now to do some science. And so we did a Reading to Antarctica promotion with them where for every mile of the sea voyage, the children have read a nonfiction book. And we're happy to announce that in our community with the schools and the library here, the children have checked out and turned in little book reports for enough miles to power the voyage to Antarctica. So we're pretty excited about that. But it's changing, though. We lose some of the incidental business. I think that especially for active people that have a lot going on in their lives, if they can't get it on their phone or tablet or get it really quick, then they deprioritize those things. And so in aggregate, that does take a toll on the libraries. And so we're looking at, well, do we try and engage that group, or do we shift our attention to some of the other groups that are coming that we also don't feel like that we can keep up with, that maybe we need a reskill for? There's a lot of social work needs that are unmet in communities where libraries become the de facto gathering place. It's the place you can come in town where you're not going to be kicked out if you're not buying something. It's free and open to the public. You know, where libraries aren't free, we pay property taxes for them. But, you know, there's not a transaction fee when you come into the library. And just this morning, we were talking about a woman who comes into the library with some special needs, and she likes to, what she's really looking for is companionship, and she'll spend 2 to 3 hours asking staff members to find the same resources over and over again. And we talked, and we said, well, how can we find a volunteer, or is there someone who a program we can refer to where she can help find some friends? Because that's really what this is about. This isn't about finding the same 10 books for 3 hours. And I can tell you right now, I didn't have any training on that when I went to library school. But this is our reality, is how do we, or even should we, pivot from what you think of as a traditional library and a lot of the things that are written about in that article to this world where we're the de facto after-school provider, social services for those, social service safety net for people that just show up, which is fabulous that we have this place, but is that the role of the public library, or how can we find partners that can help us out in those areas? Should we engage at all, are some of the things that we're thinking about right now.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot about that. You're experiencing some of that there in Uinta County, I guess. So, reskilling, you'd have to get some social work background, I guess. And if you want to get a library science degree, maybe in the future, some social, social science.
Yeah, it really begs that question. What does that training look like? If you're going into the university world, those academic, we call them academic librarians, but those degrees and those programs for some time have shifted more to a computer, a data science focus, and many, many universities have relied on their libraries to sort of shepherd them through the transition of managing big data, because if there's one place on campus that has many, many years of managing data, I mean, that's what library catalogs are at the end of the day. But on the public side, it's less of a clear route. Some of us become children's librarians, and some of us become generalists. I think I'm more of a generalist and got to know a little bit about everything and be able to research enough to learn where to make a referral or get some more help in those areas that you might be a little weak on.
Reading this article, again, refer you to Deseret News here. We'll have this link in our description on online, upr.org. They're talking about just what you've been talking about, libraries, you know, moving into role of sort of first responders, you had front line for social services. And this article is saying that libraries have been on the front line of opioid addiction. So many libraries have naloxone on hand, you know, to try to save overdose victims. That, I guess, indicates the intensity in some areas of this frontline new role for libraries.
Certainly. And our staff have all attended training on how to administer naloxone, and we have those kits. And we're fortunate that our health department here partnered with us to make those resources and training available to us. We rely a lot on them. And in fact, we've been brainstorming something like a Bookmobile 2.0. That's what would some combination of a modern library bookmobile paired with some of the things that the health department can offer, you know, seasonal vaccinations and other resources to get them out to the people that have a hard time with mobility and the traditional people that would have used the library bookmobile to begin with. And we haven't had a bookmobile out here for a number of years, and we've had a lot of, again, I think it's some nostalgia, like, hey, what if we brought this back? What would it look like? And we're currently studying and talking to partners about what that might be and how that could help us. Instead of librarians trying to assume these roles for health response situations, how can we embed some of those folks in the organization or co-locate those services in the future to help out? I think our patrons have a lot of overlap with those from a lot of other groups that are receiving services in other areas. And with privacy laws being such as they are, none of us can talk to one another, and thank goodness for robust privacy laws. But it does create this challenge of you've got a person receiving services from various different agencies, and how do you, is there a way to coordinate or what could that look like? What should that look like? And coupled with, a lot of people don't want help either, you know, just want a place to be, and I'm more comfortable with that role, you know, come be in this place, come get warm, read a book.
It sounds like, you know, one of the fears is irrelevance, right, as the world moves away from physical books, et cetera, but it sounds like, you know, with some of these, even given the problems associated, that as libraries embrace some of these new roles, that eliminates that fear. It's right in the center of things.
Yeah, we're right in the center of it all. And it's a question of what does this look like in each given community, and what's the real need? And I think that collectively as libraries, the State Library Division, Utah State Library Division, requires us to turn in strategic plans every couple of years to maintain our certification. And as I've talked to some of my colleagues about the things they're looking at as they study the needs in their communities, it's I'm not hearing questions of irrelevance. I'm hearing questions of how do we adapt and adjust and meet these new and emerging needs. And sometimes they're not new and emerging. They've just been overlooked for whatever reason there might be. One of the things that's been fantastic is a Utah State University program that was grant-funded, Create Better Health Utah, and they've had a few other initiatives with the county extension offices working with health departments and others and libraries to engage on better health outcomes. And I really like these kind of collaborative programs that let libraries stay in their information service support lane and bring in some of these other partners to address these issues. But we've been in a position where we can inform and engage with these partners and let them know where they're likely to meet the sorts of folks that they're trying to help with these programs.
Let's take a break. We're talking with Sam Passy, director of the Uinta County Library in Vernal. We're talking about the future of libraries and responding to an article, a recent article in the Deseret News titled, Out of Print, Can Libraries Survive the Digital Age? I'd love to hear from you. I know libraries are much beloved, especially among the public media community. I want to know, what was your experience with the library growing up? How do you use your library today? And what do you think should be the future of the library looking forward? You can reach us by email to upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. This conversation will continue following this brief break. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're looking at the future of the library, a beloved public institution. A lot of changes happening. What's going to be happening in the future with fewer people reading? And as we are reading, we're turning increasingly to e-books. And so the old picture of the library is changing, where you go and check out a physical book. Although Sam Passy, director of the Uinta County Library in Vernal, is our guest. I guess people still do that, right? Or do they check out physical books?
Oh, yeah, certainly. I mean, we had about 250,000 physical item books checkouts, you know, things that walked through the doors of the library. And, you know, like I said earlier, children's circulation is robust. And one of the things that has been interesting to me is the Netflix effect. When I started here, we'd have about 500,000 checkouts a year, but a good half of those were DVDs and movies. And in this particular community in Vernal and Uinta County, what I'm seeing is that those DVD checkouts have been the ones that have been decreasing a lot, while the book checkout in this community has been pretty stable. Yes, the ratio of physical book to downloadable book is changing. It, you know, downloadables went from 0% of our business here 15 years ago to about 25% of our business right now. But 75% of our checkouts of that 250,000 number is still happening face to face in person with the librarian. One of the things that we're looking at adjusting right now is as we look at, well, when you make the decision to come into the library because you have other options, what's driving that decision? Is it saving money? You know, we can only afford to buy so many books and other things. Some libraries put a cost savings calculator on the checkout receipt. You know, this year Tom has checked out 22 books and of a value of X number of dollars, he saved this much money, and that's kind of fun. But we're really looking at what does that journey look like? What are the different touch points along the way? How can we improve and adjust those? So for those people that do come in and that talk about their experiences, that we can make sure that what they're sharing about the library is positive, impactful, how the library's impacted them. Again, if indeed we have, and I put forth that we are and we do, it's always nice to see these things bear out in the hard data as well. But it's a really exciting time.
We do have a caller. Walt in Smithfield has called us. Walt, thanks for joining us. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Yeah. I just wanted to comment. It's interesting because libraries have been kind of a mainstay in our family. We have 4 young kids. And I just think through the different communities we've lived in, like the Idaho Falls Library, they had a lot of interactive, almost like play areas for kids. And I know that's not a traditional library thing, but especially during the harsh, cold winters there, it was a lifesaver for my wife and us during those times. And just even in general, now that our kids are reaching that age of being able to read, just having the broad selection of kids' books. I just don't know how we do it without a library, you know? But yeah, I think that's like the biggest thing for me right now is just the opportunity to go get like, you know, 10, 15 books every 2 weeks for the kids. So they're always reading something new and fresh.
Can I ask you, Walt, have the libraries changed since you were a kid? Is that, or essentially it sounds like your kids are checking out books.
Yeah, yeah. I do think some libraries have changed. Here in Smithfield, in Cache Valley, I would say it's really similar. The only difference I would say is the increase in programs. But we went to one that was I'm trying to remember now. They did a sleepover for little stuffies, like plush stuffies, and they took a bunch of pictures with them overnight. They dropped them off the night before, and we picked them up in the morning and watched a slideshow, and my kids really like that. But, yeah, just some more programs, but ultimately they've expanded the library here with additional books. So probably maybe one of the outliers, it sounds like.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for sharing your experience, your comments. Thank you, Will. Walt. Sam Passy, what do you think about that? He says libraries have been a mainstay for his kids, play areas for the kids, and he appreciates broad selection of children's books.
Yeah, definitely. That's wonderful, Walt. Thank you for calling in and sharing that. Down in our library, we're not close to a children's museum and again the big long winter point, that's huge. So that's one of the things that we've embraced as well. We have 15-foot long Lego table. We have these magnet wall boards where people can attach pipes and explore gravity and make little tennis balls, do all these tricks going through things. We've had light tables and little air tunnels, but a lot of different ways for children and families to engage. And children's services is definitely a mainstay of public libraries these days, and most libraries that have been built or rebuilt within the last 15 years or so have included some sort of interactive children's area. Many libraries have teen areas and preteen areas. That's an interesting aside. When we built this library, I myself wasn't aware enough of what the local school district, there's only one here, had available for teenagers, especially those that are in the 15, 16 plus crowd. And we designed a lot of the things in this library that we thought older teenagers would like. And then turns out the older teenagers are often busy with extracurriculars and jobs and things with associated with the high school and their high school days. But the kids that were coming into the teen area were those that were, say, 10 to 14 or 15 years old, kind of this in-between group. And it's been a lot of fun to add a coding club, to add different ways, STEM programming primarily and some art programming, but ways to engage these groups of kids that tend to come in the after-school hours. You know, what they used to talk about is the latchkey kids. We're here for a couple hours while mom and dad are finishing up work. And we consciously, our library board a few years ago, made a concerted effort and said, how are we going to program to this group and embrace that these kids are going to be here? And what do we need to bring in and offer? And so we have different after-school programs every day. And again, not all of them are geared around books and reading, but some of them are. We have author clubs and writers clubs where kids can basically sit in a circle and share things that they've written, or we've done our own comic fandom parties where kids work with an artist for, these are all free classes. Everything's free in the library. Sometimes you have to reserve a seat on popular programs, but we've had local artists who have been gracious enough to donate their time to come in and put on after-school programs for a series of weeks where each of the kids in the program might learn how to create a graphic novel. And then at the conclusion of the program, we have an open-to-the-public comic party, FanX type thing where the kids can come in and sell the comics that they've created, engage with other local artists and members of the community. But when you think about libraries and the social connection part of their DNA. They're all about sharing ideas. I mean, these books are, in the nonfiction world, are about sharing ideas, experiences. In the fiction world, sometimes it's getting an escape, getting a new perspective, just diversion, which are all very important, especially, again, the long winters we all tend to get in Utah. But it's been a really fun way to engage with kids and teens and those coming into the library and give options to their families. What do you do with your kids when it's too cold? We have the greatest snow on Earth, but you get a few steps removed from the greatest snow on Earth, and we have the greatest cold on Earth, too. And what do you do there?
I want to talk about e-books. That's how I consume the library these days. In fact, that's even preceding the current situation in Logan, which is they're in a transition period. They had a temporary library. They built a nice new library here in Logan. But my understanding is for the next few months, all you can do is e-books now, and you know, while they transition to the nice library. But I've enjoyed that, and I've appreciated the library to be able to check out an e-book. I can't afford to go buy all those e-books. But there's some problems there. We had a program on this, the last time we talked, where some publishers want to put a lot of restrictions on what libraries can do with e-books.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Local publishers, I should note, last time we had a discussion about a couple of local publishers that publish a lot of stuff on the LDS type market. And a couple of those have come around and started offering terms, pretty generous terms to libraries to provide their e-books and e-audiobooks. So thank you to those from those organizations who must have listened to our podcast or our interview last time. We're in a world right now where a few months ago the Internet Archive, which had this innovation they called controlled digital lending, their concept was, hey, this is the United States, so when I buy something, I then own it and can do what I want. And so their idea was, well, we're going to buy all these books, and then we're going to scan them. We're going to put the physical book in a shipping container and park it on the back lot, and then we're going to let the digital ebook version go online, but only one person at a time can use it. And then the court recently said, you can't do that without permission, and have shut that one down. And so the alternative left to libraries, the legal route, which, you know, we're government agencies when it comes down to it for the most part, so we're very interested in following the law and making sure we're dotting I's and crossing T's. We tend to get our e-content from a couple of companies. One of them many people have heard of called Libby, Overdrive, and there's a few others. But in the state of Utah, we have a statewide public library ebook consortia where each library pays some dues, basically, agrees to buy, and I use the term buy loosely because we're basically leasing content, ebooks from Overdrive. And, the new Jack Ryan book might come out and have terms where for $90 you can check the book out to anyone that wants to, one at a time for the next 2 years. Well, the next book by John Grisham might be it's only good for 12 checkouts, period, and then you need to buy a new license to use these things. So we're licensing content. So our systems have adapted to identify how that works, so we can integrate. You can go to one place in our catalog, go to one place and search all the physical library or just the things that you can download, or you can go into the apps and then just see the downloadable stuff. I feel like the models could be more favorable to public libraries, but at this point I'm just happy that these publishers are making their content available, period. It does feel like a money hole each year. We're devoting more and more resources into audiobooks, downloadable ebooks, downloadable audiobooks. And every time I do that and send one of those bills for payment over to the county, I get a little bit of stomach ache because it feels like, yes, we're buying access for a time, but we're not we're not adding to that physical collection. Now we're still spending about two-thirds of the materials budget, you know, including all different formats of things, print, downloadable, what you have. Two-thirds is on physical material still, and just a third is on downloadables. So our shelves still have lots of nice, new, shiny books. Things look good. People are checking them out. But one interesting thing is that latest, greatest New York Times bestseller that you want to read might be sitting on the shelf in physical format in the library, but have a six-month-long or three-month-long wait list in Libby online, downloadable, because there's so much less friction for a lot of people to get that. You can be sitting in your pajamas and think, oh, I just finished a book. I'm going to get another one. I'll just put it on hold from the library, which is fantastic that we can offer that. But ironically, if people want quicker, faster access, many times quicker, faster in library world isn't the digital item. It's the, well, I'm going to drive down to the library when it's open and go in and grab the thing off the shelf, because there seems to be less competition for the physical item than the downloadable item, which is completely backwards to most rational logic. But again, it's because of those unique publisher distribution terms that we're all kind of stuck with.
Well, I'm filing that away. Maybe, you know, when library opens up again, that's what I'll do. I'll drive in, which I don't do much because it's so much more convenient just to pull up the ebook. I wonder, do you have stats on, is it moving that direction, more people reading ebooks, or is it holding steady, physical versus ebooks?
You know, it varies by community. And so I think if you ask different librarians, you'd get different answers. In Uinta County, we have a population that drives a lot. You know, going to Salt Lake and back in a day is not uncommon, you know, to do 6 hours of driving in a day. And so for us, audiobooks have always been very popular, in some ways more popular than physical books, you know, printed books. And that reflects in the downloadables, where there's might be a little bit of a waiting list for the ebook. You know, I want to read this thing with my eyes. But if you want to listen with your ears, you're a lot of times waiting several months, despite us putting the bulk of our downloadable type budget into the audiobooks, because that's what's popular here. And I think if you asked Moab or Park City or Salt Lake or Mount Pleasant, you might get a different makeup. What's the priority in their area? What is the use looking like? But our library has always been very heavy in children's circulation, much like the caller had commented, and in audio. And that trend seems to be continuing despite the format changes.
Well, let's take another break. We'll come back with more with Sam Passy. We're talking about the future of the library. This beloved institution, a lot of changes happening, and, you know, some threats, but also some opportunities. And Sam Passy is director of the Uinta County Library in Vernal. You can reach us and love to hear from you to hear about your experience with the library, either past or present. What you think the future of the library should be, and what do these changes mean for you right now? You can email us to upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. We'll have more following this.
This episode of Access Utah was first broadcast in December of last year.
You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking about a beloved institution, the public library. What's the future for the public library in our digital age? And we're talking with Sam Passy, director of the Uinta County Library in Vernal. Sam Passy, I want to talk about another potential threat. We are seeing some libraries sucked into the culture wars, controversial books, book bans. This is happening in some school libraries, but also some public libraries, and especially in the children's book area. I don't know if any of that has touched you out there. What precautions maybe librarians have to make these days?
You know, it's something that that every library is facing. We're all kind of be drawn up into this this thing that's happening in many of the public spaces in the community. I think public libraries in general have prided themselves on that we bring in many different voices and viewpoints. And if I'm buying the latest conservative take on, you know, whatever it is, I'm also trying to bring in a centrist viewpoint and a leftist viewpoint, and doing what I can to have a variety of viewpoints that cover whatever that given topic is. There are a variety of groups out there right now who are organizing various local campaigns to we call them challenge books and things, and say, yeah, you shouldn't have this in your library. So there's libraries will typically have a policy that lets members of the public know what they need to do if they feel the need to challenge things. And sometimes we make mistakes. You know, it happens. I don't and can't sit and read each title that we're thinking about buying. We rely a lot on book reviews, on sales data, on things people are requesting. And budget, of course, is a big one. But invariably, something's going to come in that someone will take an issue with, and we do our best to handle those respectfully of all parties involved, to read through the statements that they're bringing in, understand the issues, our policy, which we updated a couple months ago with the help of our attorney's office, has a new mandatory first step in it, which is a discussion with the, you know, it seems obvious, but the best practice that we've had for a number of years is that I'll reach out to whomever's putting in the challenge and have a conversation with them as a first step, and just try and listen and understand where they're coming from, what their concerns are, what their points of view are, if they're open to suggestions or alternatives, or if they've come up with something since they filled out that paper that might work well all around. But we've essentially you know, made that step mandatory on the libraries, and that we're going to reach out, we're going to have that conversation with you before this thing goes to some committee or goes any further up. And the reason for that is I think a lot of people just want to feel like someone is listening to their point of view. This is a changing world. There's a lot of things in the world that are different, or maybe they've always been around, but they're just more visible now because we're so highly connected, and maybe I'm not comfortable with that. Maybe change is just happening so quick. Well, I want to listen to those people. I want to understand what their concerns are. I want to see if there's somewhere that we can, where we can meet them that's, you know, not blocking someone else's right to find and read and use the materials that they want to find and read and use. In 17 years of being the library director here, we've had just a handful of challenges. We've been lucky in that front. Some of my colleagues are seeing these things much more frequently. And again, like you mentioned, the school districts and the changing the laws, they've been hit pretty heavy with these things, to the point where some of our school district colleagues, that's all that they're doing is reviewing challenges, which, again, handicaps those libraries because they're less able to talk to the students, engage with the students, find out what the kinds of things they're interested in, what their struggles are, and find resources to help them if all I'm doing is reviewing a challenge. But there's no easy answers. We all share this earth together, and we're trying to make space for civility and mutual respect, and realizing that you know, sometimes we're both right and we're both wrong. But unfortunately, not everyone who comes in the door or files one of those materials challenges has any room for negotiation, and that's a challenge. And I don't have a good answer for that.
I've been referencing this article from the Deseret News, Mark Nielsen's article. Again, the headline is "Out of Print, Can Libraries Survive the Digital Age?" That's what we've been responding to here in the program. One of the sections here, Mr. Nielsen's article, talks about the pandemic effect, and that, of course, many libraries suspended in-person services for at least a time during the pandemic. But that it was found that the pandemic accelerated the process that already was ongoing of reimagining how libraries could best serve their communities. I wonder how did that happen in the Uinta County Library, and what sorts of things came out of the pandemic for you guys?
Yes, it definitely had some impacts on us, and it gave us pause. I think we'd been collecting this list of things that we wished we had done differently or could do differently, that we frankly never had the time to sit down as a group and think about, but the pandemic definitely accorded us space to do that. I remember having all these socially distanced meetings, which were an interesting memory to reflect on. But in our area, one of the big things that we did is we re-envisioned how we were providing services to teenagers and to older adults. Some of the things that came out by necessity during the pandemic were a drive-up service, a homebound delivery, book delivery service for those that couldn't get out or didn't feel comfortable getting out. We've kept both of those, which in afterthought, you know, of course the library should be allowing drive-up service for those that might have mobility issues. You know, it's a nice convenience thing. And, of course, the library should be offering some kind of delivery to homebound folks or folks where that works better. Why didn't we think of these before? You know, and I think the pandemic gave the space for, look, let's just try this stuff out. Let's see if it works. And so we did that. In the teen area, we went from being kind of an unstructured hangout, which was sort of in vogue in the library literature when we built the building, but our lived real experience here was that we needed purposeful ways to engage the teens and preteens that were coming into the library, hence the after-school programs that we really leaned into and summer various summer programs and day camps and things. And but it's an ever-evolving thing, this public library concept. And I'm so glad that our predecessors funded them. And when I look at our strategic plan action list for the coming years, the discussion draft that we're talking about, and I think about the things that would have been on the list when they first decided to have a public library in Vernal in about 1908. there's a lot on the list that wouldn't have been on the list then, but the spirit of the list, I think, is the same, which is providing broader opportunity and access to information and a community gathering spot.
One of the things, of course, is online access for people who don't have that. I guess, you know, that's is that still provided at your library? I think it's at a lot of libraries.
You know, we've phased back on that. We had some pandemic funding to circulate hotspots. We have laptop computers that we check out, that people can check out and take home for a week at a time. What we found with our local school district is that during the pandemic, they assigned one-to-one Chromebooks for each of their students that were, I think, second grade and above. And that really, that and a pandemic, access connection, affordable connection, I forget the acronym on this, but the local teleco has done a really good job at finding ways and funding to get some reduced rate for folks. And so we've seen to connect to the internet. So we've seen less of a need for the library to be in the space of providing that connection per se. But we do offer Wi-Fi in the library outside our building at a rural community center. And we have another satellite location that we're in talks with the local fire district, fire department to have some library services out of. And so we're kind of leaning back into the community hubs side of things versus the, you know, I'm going to bring the internet to your home. It's just a little more sustainable for us, and and I feel like a responsible use of public funds.
I want to ask why we love libraries. It's certainly out there. I feel it. It's probably connected to books, right? Love of books. Kids still love books. I still have a vivid memory of the cover of the first book I checked out from my school library. Why do we love libraries? And is that changing? Do we still love our libraries?
I love libraries. I know that, but I'm a little biased here.
That's right.
You know,
what are you hearing from people?
I was that reluctant reader. I really just did not read. And then when I was 14, I had a knee surgery, and I couldn't get out, and I couldn't play basketball with my buddies. I couldn't do a lot of things physically. So my mom, you know, me going stir crazy, I'm sure I was driving her nuts. She's like, well, you know, I take the little kids to story time. I'll drag Sam along, and maybe he can find something to entertain himself at the library. And I discovered that they had Star Wars books. I had no idea that there were Star Wars books. And I was a big Star Wars fan, and so I you know, kind of tentatively checked one out and then read it 24 hours, you know, that next day, and was begging my mom 2 days later to take me back to the library. And then I got a whole stack of them. And those poor Sandy City librarians, or Salt Lake County librarians down there in Sandy, they kept me stocked, but they probably thought someone was stealing all their Star Wars books for a minute there, because there was nothing on the shelf. So they were all on my reading pile. And for me, it was really that magic, that fueling the mind, getting an escape. And that's still one of my favorite parts about the library. And I make sure that we have the Star Wars section stocked up nicely.
That's wonderful. We just have about a minute left. I do want to get this in. This article that I've been referencing, Deseret News, mentions literacy. According to the Library Journal, 1/5 of American adults are functionally illiterate. I know libraries are involved in trying to help there.
Yeah. Yeah, and that 1/5 is a very hard nut to crack. We're fortunate to have great partners in the local Rotary and higher ed and school district, and we all work together and chip away where we can. We have a volunteer income tax group who has really run into that level, finding that population, and sometimes we're able to, you know, just kind of cross-pollinate. And someone came in for taxes, we discovered they may have some literacy needs, and so we're, you know, here, check this thing out. Is this something you want to know some more about, and in a non-threatening manner? And that's a challenge in a field that I don't have a ton of expertise in, but we're just so grateful for our partners and employees and volunteers who are there every day trying to help people out and improve literacy outcomes.
Well, Sam Passy is the director of the Uinta County Library in Vernal. Sam, thanks for everything you do. Thanks for all the librarians for everything they do.
Hey, thank you very much, and keep reading.
We will. We'll keep reading. Definitely our public radio community is our big readers. We've been talking with Sam Passy, responding to a Deseret News article headlined, Out of Print, Can Libraries Survive the Digital Age? Keep the comments coming at upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to Access Utah.